David Hawkins, of course, is the well-known, by our listeners, editor of Congressional Quarterly's Roll Call, author of the Brilliant Hawkins Here blog and column, and he has covered Congress in various positions at Congressional Quarterly, the Bible of the congressional material, since 1995. David Hawkins, I asked you recently about whether Elizabeth Warren was going to be the VP candidate, and in a sentence or two with Hillary Clinton, you said, maybe not, because a Republican would appoint another Republican to her seat, among other problems. And also because there some people wouldn't vote, right, because two women on the ticket might be too much. You didn't say you thought that. You said some people might not vote that way. So right. is that
a Donald Trump construct, some people say.
Yeah. Is that fair to sum that
up?
That's a
fair summary.
So now let's go to the other side. Let's go to the Republican side. Who do you expect to see the vice presidential candidate when and if Trump wins his nomination?
I think that one is far more wide open. I think what Donald Trump has said, is that he's looking for an experienced politician, somebody who understands how to get things done in Congress a little better than he admits that he does. He has kind of tamped down talk of a minority or a woman, saying that might be seen as pandering. So with all those caveats, I think we're probably looking for a middle-aged white guy, not a diversity play. I think the one that I've been talking about all spring is Newt Gingrich,
yep,
former Speaker of the House. He's got what Trump says he needs. Newt Gingrich doesn't have another play in his own political career, so there's really no downside for him of being dragged down with this if it doesn't go well, whereas some of the more younger people on the rise politically are very wary of running with Trump. So I think it's going to be somebody like Newt Gingrich, maybe Jeff Sessions of Alabama, who was Trump's first congressional endorser. Obviously, Chris Christie of New Jersey, who after he got out of the presidential race has become almost sycophantic fan of Donald Trump's. Mary Fallon, the governor of Oklahoma, seems to be the only woman who is being seriously considered. She's a serious player on defense issues, and she's been a pretty popular governor. I don't think, however, it's going to be some out-of-the-blue business person or general. Military general. I think it's going to be a traditional elected official politician.
Or a woman governor out of the blue from, for example, Alaska. Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be right. I don't think it's going to be one of those this time. But I didn't think that was going to be the case 8 years ago either.
They probably learned their lesson. Let me go, if I can, to the Republican politics and the uneasy alliance between McConnell, Ryan, and Trump. What's going on there?
Yeah, uneasy alliance. Boy, that's putting it kindly. I think there's going to be a very interesting meeting. Donald Trump is coming to the Capitol to meet with all of the House Republicans. It will be his first time actually making eye contact with probably a majority of the Republican members of Congress. They don't know him well. And Ryan, of course, will be the presider at this meeting. Ryan, I think, feels like he's in a total bind, that he cannot say absolutely no to Donald Trump, as given where Ryan is as a leader of the party, but he wants to damn him with as much faint praise as he can possibly get away with. And I think that is what is going to be the posture of a whole lot of the Republicans in Congress. McConnell has taken a different approach. McConnell has said that he feels comfortable also damning Trump with faint praise. He was on the TV talk shows last weekend and would not say whether he thought Donald Trump was qualified to be the most powerful person on the planet, that was for the electorate to decide. But McConnell has been more forceful in saying that he is sort of all in behind Donald Trump and just wants to spur him on to improve his performance as a candidate.
Well, this is truly the rock and the hard place. They can't win. But there's something I want to know, and you are really close to this, David, and I've never quite understood it. Now, they have a candidate who, in some polls, is running at the 50-50 level with Hillary Clinton. So how can they turn their backs on him so vigorously, in which they clearly are doing, if, in fact, they have a candidate who could be a winner and deliver all the prizes to them?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that... there is one thing motivating, you know, politicians more than anything else, which is their enlightened self-interest. And if they think Trump is a loser and is going to make them lose, they will steer clear of the guy. But if they think that if as the summer gives way to fall, remember here, it's only July and a lot can change. I mean, the polls can change. I mean, Michael Dukakis was, you know, measuring the drapes in the Oval Office at this time in 1988. I mean, really.
Before he got in the tank. That's before he got in the tank. Yeah.
That's before he got in the tank. Right. So there's a lot of things, a lot of tanks that can yet be gotten into on both sides.
And yet, when I ask that question to so many people, the only thing that they can sort of come up with is, philosophically, they think Trump will stray from their ideology. Is that possible that that's really the reason? Because I've always thought it's all about winning.
It is. The ideology thing is part of it. I mean, they are worried that if Trump becomes president, it's going to be unlike any relationship between a president and a Congress of the same party that we've seen ever, which is to say, first of all, they are very worried that Trump has an even more robust view of presidential power than Barack Obama or George W. Bush did. And they are worried that Trump is going to try and muscle through all kinds of policies without asking Congress's permission, which they don't like as a matter of both political power and sort of, you know, their own egos. And they are worried that he's ideologically inconsistent and unpredictable. And they are worried that even if he becomes president, he will continue to say things which will polarize the Republican Party, continue to turn off big chunks of the electorate, and not provide a recipe for long-term success for the party.
Wow. That's about the best answer I have ever heard on this. Let me talk to you, David Hawkins, about we had Chris Gibson here decide not to run. He had self...
Governor Gibson.
That's very funny because he said he was looking at a gubernatorial race and decided he wasn't looking at it. Going to teach at Williams College. Did you go to Williams?
Yeah.
Did you go to Williams?
My wife went to Williams.
Yeah, you see? And he's going to teach there for 3 years.
Really?
And he says he's out of politics. That's right. So he's being, so there's a big race for his seat between a Republican, John Faso, and a Democrat, Zephyr Teachout. You know, it is going to be very interesting because she's on the left. He's, I think, pretty well to the right. He's an anti-Hillaryite and stuff like that. What does that look like to you?
That looks pretty fascinating to me. One thing, I don't know enough about the details of that race to say something. I will just use this moment to underscore something I said, I think, the last time we were together, which is, you know, the people of the North Country, upstate New York and New England, are living in a unique part of the country, which is to say there are three congressional districts in upstate New York that CQ Roll Call races toss-ups.
Wow.
All bumped up next to each other up there. And there's no other place like that in the country where there are three congressional districts all connected where that could go either way for Congress. And upstate New York has been that way for this entire decade. It's highly unusual. And people who live up there should not think that's what the rest of the country is like. The rest of the country is vast, vast stretches of rural redness punctuated by blue cities and suburbs.
David Hawkins, thank you so much, as always, for some really brilliant analysis. We appreciate it very much. And again, David Hawkins is editor of Congressional Quarterly's Roll Call, author of the Hawkins Here blog and column, covered Congress in various positions at CQ since 1995.